Since March 2007, one online audio production group has pushed the boundaries.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents Maudlin.
It's sounding board. Audio drama with Lumpy Bits.
You have been listening to Jake Sanson.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents
My name is Feedback, and these are my stories.
Last time on Gaia's Voyages.
This is the Broken Sea Audio production of Escape from New York.
OTR Swagcast.
Doctor Who, starring Mark Telita as the Doctor.
BrokenSea.com. New audio every Thursday.
Download complete. The Icebox Radio Theater is now your home for
mystery.
Tales of mystery, tales of suspense. All original, all the time.
What's that?
What's what?
Something's over there.
Visit iceboxradio.org for CDs, downloadable MP3s, information on coming attractions, and more.
Do I frighten you, little girl?
On the World Wide Web at www.iceboxradio.org.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swagcast.
Welcome back to the Swagcast. This week on the Swagcast, we escape to Adventure Thursday. Yes, just couldn't go by without adding some more groovy adventures from Escape. Hope you enjoy.
Fed up with the shoveling snow? Can't shake that cold of yours? Wonder what the world's coming to?
We offer you Escape.
You are alone in a remote village on the Welsh border, surrounded by silent townspeople who are watching and waiting for you to decide to lose your soul.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to a remote section of Wales and a strange village between two worlds. As Algernon Blackwood described it in his eerie story, Ancient Sorceries.
I had spent a week's vacation in Wales and was returning to London by train when it all began. It was late afternoon. We'd left the Welsh mountains and crossed the border into Western England, passing through a countryside which appeared singularly empty, deserted of life. Over the soft hills and the valleys between hung a faintly perceptible haze, given to the whole landscape a feeling of enchantment and unreality. The train at length slowed down to a stop at a tiny wayside station. As it did so, a sudden thought occurred to me. Why not leave the crowded train with its irritating noises and spend the night in this peaceful spot, then take a slower and emptier train in the morning? On the impulse, I rose from my seat and the man sitting opposite to me said,
"Why say so? We only stop here for a minute or two. If you're thinking of walking about a bit."
"No, as a matter of fact, I'm getting off here."
"I thought you were going to London."
"I'll go on in the morning. I'm going to stay here for the night."
"I strongly advise you not to."
I beg your pardon?
"This is the village of Malton."
"Malton? I've never heard of it."
"Few people have, outside. But if you place any value on your soul, you'll not spend the night here.
My dear sir, what are you talking about? Why not?
Because of the sleep. And because of the cats. That's all I can tell you.
You're insane. I'll take my bag if you don't mind.
You're making a terrible mistake. You may not even have the chance to regret it. Don't leave this train. I know what I'm talking about.
No, but utter nonsense.
Don't. Don't, I tell you.
Goodbye. I stood there on the embankment as the train pulled away. What in the world was the matter with the man anyway? Cats, sleep. His words made no sense. I picked up my bag and started walking up the long hill toward the village. And suddenly, for no reason at all, I shivered. Hello? Hello, is anybody here?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see you at first.
Is there something I can do for you, sir?
Why, yes, I saw your sign outside the Inn of the Golden Bough. I should like to get a room, please.
You're planning to stay here?
Why, yes.
Very well. You may sign the register. Here.
Thank you. I'm going to catch another train and go on in the morning.
Oh, yes, of course.
There we are.
Arthur Llewellyn. Llewellyn?
Yes, from London.
Arthur Llewellyn. You've been a long time coming back.
What?
But now that you're here, you'll find there are some things that never change.
Madam, I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about.
You rang, madam?
Where did you come from?
Dunreary, the gentleman would like a room for the night. His name is Arthur Llewellyn.
Aye, so it is. Welcome back to Malton, sir.
What? Why, I knew I'd never been here before. What was it all about? First the man on the train, and now these people. Were they crazy, or was I? I left the inn and walked along narrow cobbled streets, beneath quaint gables leaning out from the silent, shuttered houses, through dappled pools of light and shadow. It gradually dawned upon me that the village of Malton was centuries old, older than any town in England ought to be. And the people I passed now and then were dressed in the fashion of another day. They paid no attention to me. They went silently about their own business. Yes, that was it. That's what I'd been noticing. Silently. They came and went with only soft padding sounds to mark their passing, as though they walked in shoes with soles of velvet. When I stopped, there was no sound. The silence was unbroken. I hurried on through the streets and came at last to the far side of the village, to a place where the hill broke away sharply from a low, flat wall of stone, perhaps a rampart once. I sat down upon it, and the dreamy, lazy somnolence of the place stole over me. Presently, I don't know how much later, I became aware of the sound of weird music rising out of the vale below me. I looked down from the rampart. The sunken plain at the bottom melted away into a sea of gathering shadow, blurred in a swirl of thickening mist. I thought of dead trees swept by the night wind, of animals with half-human voices singing to a white moon, of the wailing of cats on the roof tiles at night, of unearthly creatures far off in the sky calling to one another in chorus. I felt my heart beat faster and faster, felt the vague stirrings of some urge inside of me, trying to answer the awful call of that music. I fought against the feeling, fought against myself. And even as I did, I found I was staring down into that valley, peering desperately into the dark mist, trying to see, I don't know what. And then suddenly, the music ended.
I stood on the rampart alone, dusk fallen around me, and the early night wind moaned with a chill breath. Quick terror rose up in me. I turned and ran through the darkened streets, ran with my heart pounding, dodging its shadows, through one dim alley after another, and arrived at last panting and almost breathless at the door of the Golden Bough.
Been a long time returning, Mr. Llewellyn. It's past 7.
Oh, yes, yes. I guess I walked farther than I meant to. I didn't realize it was so late.
You heard the music, didn't you?
Yes. Strangest music I've ever heard. How did you know? Who plays it, anyway?
Then you didn't remember it?
No. Why should I? The thing was becoming irritating, this quiet insistence that I was someone else. I went into my lonely dinner and ate as quickly as possible. Then, taking the candle Dundreary gave me, I crossed the lobby, climbed the stairs behind the desk, and walked past silent doors down the long empty hall that led to my room at the end. I was halfway to my door when suddenly the flame of my candle went out. I stood stock still in the pitch blackness, fumbling for a match. At that moment, I knew that someone or something was there with me in the darkness. I held my breath and listened. There was no sound, no movement. I reached out and felt the wall and moved along it, feeling my way in the inky blackness. It was then I touched it. Near my face, another soft, warm, yielding. And alive. Who? What is it?
It is I, Ilsa.
Who?
Ilsa. Don't you remember me, Arthur?
No.
But wouldn't you like to remember me? Don't you want to see me again? To look at me? No?
I don't know.
But not tonight, Arthur. Perhaps tomorrow. Tomorrow.
I stumbled blindly through the door of my room and shut it behind me. I lit the candle and flung myself across the bed. The room was small, with one shuttered window, and the light of the flame flickered on the walls and ceiling. I stared at the hand that had touched her out there in the dark hall. I lifted it up to my face and smelled of the barbaric scent that still clung to my fingers. It was evil, maddening. The candle sputtered and burned, and the melted minutes dripped away. Who was I? Who were these people? Who was Ilsa? I fell asleep finally, and dreamed of soft-moving creatures, and the silence of life in a dim, muffled world devoid of all feeling but ecstasy. And I dreamed, too, of cats.
Slept quite late this morning, Mr. Llewellyn.
Huh? Oh, morning, Dundreary. I felt as if I'd been drugged.
The night air here in Morton is very conducive to sleep.
I'd meant to catch the morning train for London. Now it's too late.
What a terrible shame.
Oh, by the way, Dundreary.
Yes, Mr. Llewellyn?
I was wondering if you'd know anyone by the name of Ilsa.
Ilsa happens to be my daughter, Mr. Llewellyn.
Oh, I didn't hear you come in.
I hope you were able to sleep well, without any unpleasant dreams.
I guess so.
I'm so happy to hear it. Perhaps then you may decide to stay with us for a long time.
That's very kind of you.
No, it isn't kindness, Mr. Llewellyn. but all of us are hoping that you may decide soon.
Decide? Decide what?
It was no use. None of them would answer my questions. They seemed to think I should know already. I left the inn as soon as I'd eaten, walked around the streets of the village, and I began to notice that I was never completely alone. If I turned down an empty street, someone always stepped from a doorway or entered from the opposite end. Wherever I went, within 5 minutes, a dozen people were strolling near me. And I realized these people were watching me, tensely, as a cat watches a mouse or another cat.
It's quite fortunate you came back early, Mr. Llewellyn. Your dinner this evening is a rather special one.
Special? What do you mean by that?
You are to have a guest.
Huh? Who?
An old friend. She's coming now.
The girl who came toward us across the room was lithe and slim, and she moved with the sinuous grace of a young panther. She was lovely, exotic, and terrifyingly beautiful.
I present Mr. Arthur Llewellyn, Miss Ilse. He's been with us for 2 days.
Yes, I know. My mother told me. May I sit down, Mr. Llewellyn?
Hmm? Oh. Oh, yes, please do. Here, permit me.
Thank you. You may sit, Andre.
Thank you, Miss Ilse.
Then you're Ilse?
Yes. Don't you remember me, Arthur?
From last night. It was you last night, wasn't it?
Yes. And other nights. Can't you remember all the other nights?
No. No.
Then we shall have to try that much harder. It's been such a very long time.
Please, Ilse, what is it all of you talk about? I don't understand any of it.
You will, Arthur. Unless you leave, of course. Weren't you planning to take a train to London in the morning?
Yes. No. No, I've changed my mind.
I'm glad you did. We'll try to make you happy here, my mother and I. And then perhaps you'll stay a long, long time.
No. I must leave for sure in a day or two.
Suppose we wait and see. And meanwhile, if there's anything you want, all you have to do is ask me.
All right. Why don't you tell me about...
Yes, Arthur. About what?
No. No, I don't want to know. I don't want you to tell me. Suddenly I realized I was afraid to know. Afraid! I should leave now, but I couldn't leave. It was Ilse. She attracted, repelled, fascinated, and horrified me, all in single flashes of blasting emotion. I felt the presence of a great gray curtain ready to roll back at any moment and leave me on the brink of an awful adventure. I knew the village held its breath, watched and waited, and then on the evening of the fifth day, the whole ghastly secret exploded into hideous life. After dinner, Ilse had asked me to walk with her. It was the first time I'd been outside the inn after dark. We walked through the village in the moonlight, saying little, and came finally to the stone rampart above the sunken plain. We were quite alone.
Look, Arthur.
Hmm?
It's a full moon tonight. Do you know what that means?
Yes. It means I can see more clearly how beautiful you are.
Do you really believe that? Do you think I'm beautiful?
Like a soft, sleek leopard in a warm jungle of shadows.
But wait, I'll see you even better in a moment.
Arthur, what are you doing?
These dry leaves by the wall will make an excellent bonfire. There, you see?
No.
What's wrong?
The fire. No, Arthur, put it out.
All right, Ilse. There. Don't worry. It's all right. Hardly had a chance to get started. There, you see, it's all out.
Yes, I see.
Ilse, why did it bother you so much?
Don't you remember the fire?
No. What fire?
Oh. No. Don't talk of it. Look at me instead. Look at me, Arthur.
Yes, Ilse.
Arthur, do you love me?
Yes. Yes, Ilse, I love you. I love you and I want you.
I'm glad. That means you'll come back to us then.
I don't know what you mean, Ilse.
You can know everything. Tonight, if you want to.
Yes, I do.
You must know a part of it already. Down inside. You must remember some of it, don't you?
Yes. It's like something buried for centuries inside of me, and now it's beginning to come alive.
Let it come alive. Don't fight against it. It belonged to us once long ago, and you still belong.
Yes. I seem to know that.
That's why you came back. You heard them calling. You heard me calling. And you came seeking the old life again.
Yes. But Ilse, I'm afraid.
Are you afraid of me? Look at me.
Ilse.
Kiss me.
Ilse.
Will you live the old life again with me tonight?
Yes, yes.
I've known that you would because I own you, Arthur. You belong to me and I want you and I shall never let you escape from me again.
Yes, yes.
Go back to the inn then. Wait for me, Arthur. I shall come for you. Tonight.
Back at the inn, I paced the floor of my room, a tense, uncontrollable excitement driving me along in a nervous frenzy. The dry crypt of memory broke open, and all the things I'd hidden away for centuries poured into my consciousness. I knew now why I'd come here. I knew what I was going to do. And I knew that I was lost. I sensed the rising stir of movement throughout the inn, and outside in the courtyard below my window. I knew what to expect when I threw open the shutter. From every window of the inn and from those of the houses about the court were leaping great monstrous beasts with soft dark fur and eyes that gleamed with eerie phosphorescence. Cats of human size. This then was the secret of Molten, lycanthropy, the witchcraft of centuries long dead and buried. The half-human cries floated up to me, and the moon cast their dark shadows on the ground as they padded across the courtyard and vanished through the narrow streets of the village, heading for a hideous rendezvous. This is what I'd been. This is what I wanted to be now. I scarcely heard the door of my room open behind me.
Are you ready, my lord? Shall we join them?
Ilse.
Here, Arthur. The sacred balm. Made of vervain and mistletoe and blind things out of the sea. Remember?
Yes. Yes, I remember.
Take it. Use it. We'll change now. Transform. Leap from the window and join them. Lead us again, Arthur.
Yes. But not here, Ilse. Not yet. Wait until we get there. Then we'll change.
If you wish. Come then, Arthur, to the stone wall above the grove. That's where we'll change, on the stone rampart.
In the grove on the sunken plain beneath the wall, insane shadows writhed in the moonlight and postured in the luminous mist. A thousand of the devil's own were dancing in the unearthly music born from the harmony of the black sacrifice, crying out in delirious abandon, calling to the thing that now lived inside of me, and struggled, screaming in my skull, trying to answer them back. I fought against them, fought against Ilse, pleading and clinging with her soft arms about my neck.
Now, Arthur, Come with me now, if you love me.
I love you, but I can't do it. I can't do it. Not again.
Yes, my love. Only an instant of change, and then we'll live forever.
Is it living without a soul,
Does
Elsa?
Does it matter when I'm here?
No. Once before I escaped, but I can never escape again. This time there'd be no turning back.
Am I not worth it? Look at me. Look at me, my love.
I clung to the very edge of my sanity, thought that I would not be lost and damned forever, and at this moment I knew what I could do.
Arthur, wait. What are you doing?
I found a match in my pocket, struck it, dropped it into the dry leaves that lay banked across the whole length of the stone wall.
No. No, Arthur, don't.
Yes.
I can't come to you through the fire. You're driving me away.
Yes. Go, Elsa. Go into the valley. Goodbye, Elsa. Goodbye.
You fool.
I turned from the wall of flame that for a few minutes would shut me off from the valley, ran through the moonlight streets, not back toward the inn of the Golden Bar, but down the long road that led away from that cursed village of Malton.
Well, Mr. Llewellyn, I find this one of the most interesting cases of hallucination I've encountered since I began the practice of psychiatry.
I tell you, it really happened, Doctor.
And having investigated your story a bit during the past week, I'm in a position now to answer most of the questions that have been worrying you since you came back to London.
What do you mean, investigated?
I went up to Hereford and looked over some of the old records there. Then I motored over to Malton for a couple of hours.
Well, then you know it's all true. You saw it. You know I was there.
Oh, there's no question but what you were there, Mr. Llewellyn. The lady who runs the inn showed me your name in the register. Said you left suddenly without taking your luggage or paying your bill. She was really quite put out.
I see. Well, what of the records, Doctor, the ones you spoke of?
I think they really explain the whole thing, Mr. Llewellyn. It seems that during the 14th century, the village of Malton became a kind of headquarters in that part of the country for the practice of witchcraft.
Yes. Yes, go on.
Numerous trials were held there in the late 1300s, and a great many men and women were convicted of sorcery and burned to death.
Yes?
In the records of a trial in 1372, I found the name of an Arthur Llewellyn and of Ilsa and her mother.
That proves it, then.
It proves a clear case of hallucination. You knew that story before you went there, not consciously, but somewhere deep in your latent memory.
I knew nothing about it before.
That man was an ancestor of yours. The story must be known in your family. When you arrived in Malton, accidentally, the association of the name just pulled the trigger, and your imagination did the rest.
Yes, but Doctor, my parents died when I was four. I've never been around any of my family ever.
No matter. You see, a childhood memory is amazingly persistent at times.
Yes. Yes. I suppose it is. I knew then what I had to do. The only thing I could do. There'd be no use in talking further with the doctor. He'd find some phrase of science to cover everything. He'd even try to explain away the mark I still carried across my shoulder where Ilsa had thrown her arm about me in those last mad minutes on the rampart. A mark that was covered with soft gray fur like the fur of a cat. I knew now what had to be done, and what must be done while I still retained my sanity. One last act, final and irrevocable. An act that begins by walking into the railway station at Charing Cross.
Good evening, sir. May I help you?
Yes. I'd like a ticket to Malton, please.
Malton? I don't believe I...
It's a little village on the Swansea line near the border of Wales.
Oh, yes. Here it is. I don't believe I've ever sold a ticket to Malton before.
I don't doubt it.
Let's see. 4 and 6, single fare.
first class. Did you wish a return trip, sir, or one way? What did you say?
Oh, I'm sorry. Make it one way.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. And tonight brought you Ancient Sorceries by Algernon Blackwood, adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with Paul Frees as Arthur Llewellyn, Kay Brinker as Ilsa, Anne Morrison as Madam, and William Conrad as the Doctor. Music is conceived and conducted by Cy Fuhrer.
Presenting the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon. Last week, after conquering the Hawkmen with a magic torpedo, Flash Gordon was puzzled by the fact that Zarkov, running out to meet him with upraised hands, had called him friend. Queen Azura assured Flash that it had been a trick to disconcert him. Then she ordered Saul to remove the frozen prisoners to the palace and to take good care of Zarkov, particularly. Saul did as he was ordered. When Dr. Zarkov was brought back to life, he asked for Flash. And Saul told him Flash was under the spell of the Queen's drug of forgetfulness. Then Dr. Zarkov was taken to the kitchen, where he was reunited with Dale Arden, whom he comforted by his promise to use his scientific powers to aid them all. Stung by the lashes of the electric whip, Zarkov saw an opportunity for revenge and escape. The Queen's cooks were roasting the meat between two flaming electrodes. So Zarkov, getting Dale to attract their attention, jumped on a platform and turned the flaming rays of an electrode on the cooks and guards and ordered them to stand back. Now we continue the story. Dr. Zarkov, standing on the platform in the kitchen, the flaming ray of an electrode aimed at the chief cook and guard, is calling,
"Stand back! If you take another step towards Dale Arden, I'll burn you to a crisp! Take their torch away from them, Dale."
"I've got the torch, Dr. Zarkov."
"Good. Now take away those electric whips."
"I have the whip."
"Can you find the keys to your manacles?"
"I'll see."
"Then still you two, or I'll roast you like this carcass of meat beside me. Can you find the keys, Dale?"
"Yes, I've got the keys."
"Undo your manacles. Now chain those two together. Around that boat."
"There, I have them chained. Now what shall I do?"
"Now we shall..." "Listen. What is that?"
"They're bringing Khan in from his cell."
"Where will he be stationed for his work?"
"Right over there."
"Frederick, come down this way, Dale, under the ray of the electrode. They won't notice me standing behind this machine. I will wait until they have stationed Khan, and then I will get his drop on them with the ray."
"Oh, I'm so glad you came. We never would have done anything without you, Dr. Zarkov."
"Thank you, Dale. Thank you. Appreciation always makes a thing worthwhile. Listen, you two. Not a word out of you. And drop to the floor. Do you hear? Drop to the floor. Ah, that's it. Quiet now. Everybody.
Off. Prisoner, step over here. You're detained to your station as usual. Now, prisoner, stir that soup.
Stand back from him, you dub.
Prince Zarkov.
I am glad to see you, Captain Khan.
Not as glad as I am to see you.
Stand back there, you men. I have this electrode trained on you. One move out of you other than I direct, and I will fix you so the Queen herself would not know you from this carcass here.
Oh, isn't this wonderful, Khan?
Indeed it is, Princess.
One of you men release Captain Khan. At once. Do you hear at once, or I'll turn this ray up.
That's got him, Prince Zarkov. Just wait until these manacles get off.
Oh.
There. Now. Oh, but it feels good to have those things off. Now, what can I do, Prince Zarkov?
Chain those guards up like the others.
The others? Oh, I didn't see them lying over there. How did you capture them?
The same way he did these.
And then they'll chain them, just like you are going to chain those lads there.
Good work, Princess. You're a brave girl. Here, you. Hold still. There. All right. You're next. Come on, put your hands behind your back.
You sure you do a good job, Con?
After what these boys have done to me, that warning is hardly necessary, Princess. All right, you. You're next.
Well, I don't know.
Here, hold still. Hold still, I said. What is this rubbish, Captain Con? What he mind you? Just step back from him a little. I will give him a taste of his flaming rage.
No, no, turn that thing away. I'll put my hands behind my back.
Thanks, Prince Zarkov. But I think one good poke in his jaw from me and he'd have behaved. That's what you'll get if you give me any trouble, you over there.
That is right. Do not let them try anything with you.
All right. Now I'll take you. Oh, you've decided to use your head and put your hands behind your back, eh? That's good. It certainly makes it easier for both of us. There. Now, you're safe for a while.
Good. Now we are in control of the kitchen.
Let's take over the rest of the palace.
Yes, then we can escape.
Children, children. I see how fortunate it is that I was brought here. That would not do at all. Never do what you can get someone else to do for you.
Why, what do you mean?
We shall get control of the palace, all right. In fact, we shall have control of the whole land.
How wonderful.
But we must proceed to do one thing at a time.
Well, then, what's next?
Charles Ed Flash was under the spell of the Queen's drug of forgetfulness.
He did? And we were right all the time, Princess.
Yes, Con.
So you knew that, eh?
Yes.
Then why did you not find out how it was being given to him, eh?
I did try, Prince Arthur.
How?
I watched every morsel of food that was sent to him. It was taken from the same pans and kettles as Queen Azura's food.
Well?
And nothing was put in it, here in the kitchen.
I apologize, Captain Con. You are not wasting your time. Well, then, if the drug was not put in the food before it left the kitchen, when was it put in?
Well, Dale served the food to Flash.
Well, what did you see when you served the food, Dale?
Both the Queen and Flash took portions of the same dishes as I passed them around. I never saw her make a motion towards them after she helped herself.
And the drug could not have been put in the food.
Don! Professor, here comes Tom.
Don! He is just the man we want to see.
Don! Where are... Why, what are you doing staying like this?
Just what you will be doing if you cause us any trouble, Charles.
Oh, the prisoner. Stop. Take your hands off me.
All right. I have him securely held, Prince Zarkov.
Zarkov.
Yes, that is my name. Does it mean anything to you?
Yes, you are the great scientist, the wizard of the Earth people.
That is true.
Yes, that's who Dr. Zarkov is.
Now I understand the Queen's orders.
What were her orders?
You were to be revived with particular care.
Why, may I ask?
I see it all now. Azura appointed Flash Gordon over me as commander-in-chief of all the armies. Now she wants you carefully preserved. A fool that I am. Why couldn't I see it before?
What is he talking about? Does anybody know?
I'm sure I don't know, Princess.
Nor I. What are you talking about, Charles?
Azura plans to get rid of me. She's planning on having you to replace me.
What?
She's tired of me. She wants new faces around her. She'd give me the drug of forgetfulness if it wasn't that I am the only one who can make it for her. That's the only thing that prevents her from doing away with me.
There will be just one thing that will prevent us from doing away with you, Charles.
What's that?
You're telling us how Azura gives Flash the drug of forgetfulness.
Yes, you'd like to know that, wouldn't you?
We would.
Yes, yes, of course, to be sure.
And what is more, we mean to find out.
Paul knows more than he will admit. Maybe he carries the drug on him.
That is an idea worth considering. Thank you, Dale.
Come and search him, Prince Arthur.
Search if you like.
Certainly we shall search. Nothing. He has nothing on him. What is it?
His sword. I think we can use it to better advantage than he can.
Charles, a while ago you pressed the point of this against my chest while I asked you questions about life.
Well...
One move and you would have run it through me. You said so.
And so I should.
Now I press it against your chest while I ask another question. And a wrong answer or no answer at all, and I will drive it through you like a tailor's needle through a patch of cloth.
And if his hand falters, mine will finish the job with the greatest of pleasure. Remember that, wizard.
What do you wish to know?
Tell me, how does Azura give life the drug of forgetfulness? Well?
Remember what I said, Tal.
She puts the drug in his bako.
Bako?
His wine. That's why she keeps calling for it and proposing toasts. and offering it to him as a fortune.
Why, of course. Is that true, Charles?
Yes, every day she gives it to him in a special two-handled flagon.
This?
Yes, that is the one. It has some lithium in it now.
Hey, that is the one you took to Azura by Charles' order soon after they brought me here.
Yes.
So that is how Flash has been given the drug.
Oh, I've been giving it to him myself.
Yes. You have been drugging your own sweetheart and keeping him from recognizing you.
Will Flash ever forgive me?
Why, of course, Princess. You didn't know you were giving him the drug.
I'll never take any more in.
Oh, yes, you will.
What?
Just once more.
That night, when the eyes of the dragon flash, the signal that Queen Azura wishes more Vako brought in, Dale takes in the tray with the same two flagons as before.
Ah, here comes the Vako, my prince. And the slave girl is more prompt than usual.
So she is, my queen. I'm glad of it. My throat's dry.
Help yourself, Flash. The two-handled flagon is yours, you know.
Yes, I'll get it, Azura. Thanks.
No, wait.
Eh?
What is the meaning of this presumption, slave? Flash? Azura has drugged your Vako. You lie, slave.
What are you saying, girl?
In that two-handled flagon is lithium, the drug of forgetfulness. Oh, pay no attention to the girl, Flash. She must be mad. Don't touch that flagon. Every time you have emptied it, Flash, you have renewed this wicked queen's power over you. She has caused you to forget who I am, who you are.
Flash, don't listen to her. I'll have her drawn and quartered for this. Oh, God!
It won't do you any good to call for your guards, Azura. They won't answer you. Flash, tell me you don't believe it. It's plain to say.
Well, it seems hard to believe.
It is a lie. A lie. Here, Flash, take this flagon. If she has not drugged it, then let her drink from it.
Yes. Here, Azura. Drink this and prove that the slave girl is wrong.
Flash, you don't believe me, and I thought you loved me. Don't listen to her, Flash. Words mean nothing. Get her to drink from the flagon.
Of course she'll drink from it. Won't you, Azura? Here.
No, I will not touch your drink.
What?
There, you see? She won't drink it. It's drugged, just as I told you.
I tell. Azura, I believe you did drug my drink. We'll soon find out. Now, follow this.
No.
Okay, follow it.
Oh, I can't remember anything. Where am I? What happened? Who am I? Who am I?
Oh, it's true, Dale.
Yes, Flash, darling. He's been drugging you.
Your Flash. What? The man who called me friend. Charles says this medicine should bring back your memory. If you have not been under the influence of the lithium too long, drink this.
Quickly, Flash.
Yes, quickly, Flash. Drink.
Has Flash been under the influence of the Queen's magic drugs too long? What will happen now? Get acquainted with all the characters and be ready next week at the same time for another chapter in the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape! Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Escape, brought to you by your Richfield gasoline dealer and the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York. Marketers of Richfield gasolines with Xylene, Richlube all-weather motor oil, and other famous petroleum products. Look for the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps.
Tonight, we escape to an old-time whaling ship in the Pacific. And the story of the desperation and murderous violence of the men who sailed her
as Bud Nelson tells it in his exciting tale, Yellow Wake. Panama, great chest of gold, the end of Sanford's rainbow. Stupid Sanford. Whiskey loose Sanford. And he put it right in my hand. I, his boast of an ancient book and a chart of buried treasure, reeked of whiskey. Till he flashed that poke of pieces of eight in the San Francisco saloon, and I took care of the rest. There was no time before I was walking up the gangplank of his ship, the whaling vessel Congo Queen, knocking on the door of the captain's cabin.
Who's there?
Captain Dixon.
Aye. What is this? Fine watch I have that lets strangers board without selling?
Maybe your anchor watch is a little loose, Captain, but I'll tighten it. My name's Love. Jonas Love.
Love, is it? What's your business aboard?
I'm your new first mate.
Where's Sanford?
He won't be coming back.
Sanford jumped ship? I don't believe it.
Jumping for dead, Captain. Shot, sir. Shot in a brawl.
Whiskey, no doubt. I'd warned him. It had to happen someday. You were a friend?
For a time. Whiskey makes all men friends. Or enemies. I shot him.
You shot him? You shoot my mate and you got the sand to come here telling me about it?
I shot him in the smoke of his own gun, Captain. In San Francisco, that's a fair contest. I want his job.
You want his job, eh? You kill a man and ask for his job. What sort do you take me for that I take you on in the light of what you tell me?
For an intelligent man, Captain. One who won't pass up a chance to take on a better man than Sanford. You won't find another qualified mate on the California coast.
You got a good deal of talk, Mr. Love, but talk don't run a whaler.
A ship's a ship, sir, whether she runs whale oil or slave.
Now you want to change the diggings. Where's the papers?
Papers don't run a vessel anymore in talk. Here. You'll find I speak the truth.
Well, maybe we can come to terms. Where's your gear?
Sanford won't need his.
What? Mr. Love, you've gotten on common gall. You kill a man, ask for his job, and now you take his very worldly possession. I scarce think you'd stop at his wife.
Did he have one?
Well, it's a fair thing he didn't. You're a heartless man, Mr. Love, and I don't admire you for it. But it takes a heartless man to run this crew. I dare say there's worse ones on board. Get your men in hand, Mr. Love. We sail in half the hour. South the course.
All hands on deck. Bear a hand below there. Double watch and the captain. Stand by to make sail. Lightning on this. And sail.
The Congo Queen was 300 tons between her jibs and her spanker and fleece in the teeth of the wind. A three-masted ship with canvas five high and the smell of her trade in her wood. I beat her to windward, cleared the bay, turned her south and took a fresh wind over her stern, trimmed and sailing free for the end of Sanford's rainbow. Sanford. His berth was mine, the key to his sea chest hung from my neck. Secure inside his iron-bound chest was the proof of his drunken boast. Notes, more coins green with age, a leather-bound book, and a parchment chart of Spanish legend. All I lacked was the name of the men who were in it with him, but I knew they'd show themselves soon enough. They'd be the ones who hated me most. Meantime, I had the whaling trade to learn. My life to guard against unknown men and a new captain to please. I joined Captain Sexton at the wheel.
I've been expecting you, Mr. Love.
Aye, sir.
Delay the formality, man. Respect is not in your nature.
You're right, Captain. And wrong. What's our destination?
Well, you might as well know you're not just my first officer. You're a confessed killer, and this is the high seas. One false step, and you're my prisoner. The matter is closed.
Closed it is, but not locked, sir.
You go as far as your behavior takes you. We, the Queen, and the rest of my crew hail New Bedford in time. First the horn and the 60 latitude, God willing.
60 latitude, huh? Ice, then.
Aye, ice. But also whales, many and big. Sperm, blues, humpback. We should feel quick with luck. You'll see, Mr. Love. From now on, it's watch and watch. 4 and 4. Keep 'em moving smart. Tired men don't make trouble. That includes you, Mr. Love.
Watch and watch. 4 and 4 it is, sir. She was a tight ship on the Vixen. Still, I added my bit to the squeeze. I drove the crew hard, made them hate my guts and spit at my back. They left me alone, and that's what I wanted. Kept my cabin secure inside her off while I fit Stanford's plan with my own. Oh, how the fool could have waited, I'll never know. The cache of gold was described in his notes. He'd been to the site from the Caribbean side, yet he sailed halfway around the world because he needed 4 men. 4 men who were on board. 4 men who would kill for hands on my book and my chart. Well, we were fast hauling south. Had to tempt them to show their hands. The bait was the book with some pages cut out, a false rolled chart and an open hatch. We were in Mexican waters, sailing hard on the wind. I was in my hammock, a tired dog and sleep fitful thing. Hold there. Hold in your tracks, you thieving ape. I groped like a fool for my pistol, and my man got away in the night. He'd come to open Stanford's chest. Next time, he'd come to kill. Another week passed while I studied the crew. 4 men and 30, all keeping their thoughts and their fears. Some were mean, some were meek, some mutinous, some too willing in their work. Under 4 of those beards were Stanford men. Another 2 days, and Lady Luck sent me to my quarters in the middle of the day. I needed to fill my pipe. Johnson, what brings you to my quarters?
Mr. Love, sir, I was just putting things in order. I see.
Now, come on. Get up on your feet and talk. Come on up. Now, what are you looking for, Johnson?
Well, like I say, I...
What are you hiding in your shirt?
It's just a book, sir.
Just a book it is, huh? Give it to me. Just a book for certain. And what else? What else in your shirt? A land chart of Panama, is it? You read maps, too, huh, Johnson?
I was just...
Elias Johnson. You're looking for Sanford's secret. You might as well know that it's mine now. I know you were in it with Sanford.
In with Sanford, Mr. Lover? I don't follow.
You will if you hope to make any good from Sanford's plan. Aye, you'll follow me, and the other 3 will, too.
Oh, you're talking in riddles, man.
Riddles, is it, huh? Well, you took the bait good, Johnson. I've been expecting you to come prowling. I set the bait, and you took it. But it's wrong, Johnson. Here's the pages that tell the story, Johnson. Read them.
I don't read, sir. Tanner here, he reads, sir.
I'll read it to you, but listen well. Peleg Sanford, 1838. It says right here in his own handwriting. Now listen to this. The name of the book, Sir Francis Drake Revived. Calling upon this dull and effeminate age to follow his noble steps for gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty thought, isn't it, Johnson?
Right. It's a haunting story, I'm told. Tanner here was to read it to me on wages, sir.
Say the lies, Johnson. Just listen to this. Where's Sanford marked? Now listen. He keepeth 100 slaves at least in the mines. Each slave being bound to bring in daily clear gain, all charges deducted, 3 pesos of gold for himself and 2 for his women.
Yeah.
It goes on to say, Johnson, that the daily haul, daily, mind you, was 1,600 pounds sterling. Translated, that's roughly $50,000 every day.
Wow.
Now listen. Which he keepeth in certain great chests. Of 2 feet deep, 3 broad, and 4 long. Just think of it, Johnson. Caskets full of gold. Now, you were in with Stanford, Johnson. What does this mean to us?
Oh, to us, I don't understand, sir. Oh, it's just a tale to amuse. That's all I wanted, sir. The hours are long in the book, sir.
That's enough of your simpering, Johnson. Now, who are the others? It's your boat crew, isn't it? Tannehill, Bixby, and Alcott?
Well, you... Call their names with your dying breath.
Be sensible now, man. I'm willing to put in with you. You need a leader, and I need men. And I hold the map and the book. When you're ready to talk sense, fetch your men here. Now shove off.
Hi, Mr. Love. I shove off.
And Johnson, I'll kill the man on sight I catch near my quarters. Is that clear?
Aye, Mr. Love. We know killing ourselves. You may not see the light of another day.
Motorist, do you realize how many practical improvements science has given you for your car? For example, you get better gasoline because scientific research discovered xylene. Xylene is one of the highest antinoc components in gasoline history. Xylene gives new high antinoc qualities, new flashing power to gasoline. But here's the big news. Today, every gallon of Richfield gasoline contains xylene. Let me repeat that. Every gallon of Richfield gasoline contains xylene. Xylene for split-second pickup in traffic. For smooth, knockless power all the time. Moreover, your Richfield dealer offers you a choice of two great Richfield gasoline, both containing xylene. Get Richfield High Octane at regular price for the average motor, or Richfield Ethyl for best results in the highest compression motors. Each is a champion in its class. Stop where you see the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pump. Get Richfield gasoline with xylene. And now we return you to Escape.
I let Johnson go because I needed him. I needed his men to be my crew, to sail a ship, to fight a jungle, to move a mine. I thought I could wait till they came to me, but the devil's bait is a gilded hook. When it catches your flesh, you can't shake it loose. So I read and reread and traced and retraced in my mind, and it grew and it grew and it grew, and it said, gold. Well, we were south of Mexico, and time was growing short. I went to Johnson on deck and took a desperate move. Johnson?
Aye, sir.
This is your last chance. Show up tonight with your men, or I pick my own and leave you out.
Ah, now, don't be a fool. You'll kill it for all of us.
All but me, Johnson.
Well, I'll kick you in if it's all right with my crew, my men.
Your crew, huh? Your boat crew. Just as I thought. Do I use yours or get my own?
We'll talk it out.
I'm losing my patience, Johnson. Bring your men to my cabin at 8 bells, or I get my own.
If the men agree, we'll be there at 8 bells.
It was a long chance, but it worked. At 8 bells, they came to my cabin. Johnson, Tanner, Hill, Bigsby, and all that.
Here we are, Mr. Love.
Come in. Keep quiet.
You hear me?
All right, belay the talk. Now gather around the charts. Now, there's one point I want clear. I'm getting orders, and they're not going to be mislaid. I understand, nobody else. Any man who doesn't like it can talk up now.
Mr. Love, we're taking you in.
You're wrong, Johnson. As Sanford's, legal heir, I've got 9 points of the law right here on this table, this map, and this book, and the know-how.
He's right. So the gripes, Johnson. We need a man with learning. How about it, man?
All right, that's settled. Understand, Johnson? All right, close in on this chart. Oh, yeah. I'll show you where Sanford was wrong. Now here, right here, was our position at the Benoon site. We're approximately 12 degrees, 30 minutes north by 82 degrees, 40 minutes west. See where that puts us? Not over 4 degrees off the coast of Panama, you see?
All right, man, but you still got to round the horn.
The map from the other side.
Sure, the Spanish chart shows a bearing from the Caribbean side. But look, carry that bearing on across Panama into the Pacific. Now look where we are.
Oh, we ain't a day away.
We don't have to round the horn.
Sanford never thought of that.
No, we don't have to go through with any whaling. Look, between these two mountains is a saddle. That's the mine. The bulk of the treasure is shown on the Spaniard's map right here, at the highest point in this defile.
Well, that ain't a day's march over.
Right. We can forget whaling. We don't have to round the horn, and this side fits my plan much better.
Well, what is your plan about the boats and all?
Boats be hanged. I say, take the ship.
What are you talking about?
Mutiny?
Call it what you want. This half of the world won't be a healthy place for any of us. I say, take the ship, get the gold, and head southeast. Yeah. Lands, big lands, new lands, and gold talks and any of them.
You got a good opinion of yourself, love. We're 5 against 25. 26, counting the captain. We can't take ship.
You're wrong, Johnson. You forget we're whalesmen. We've seen whales every day lately.
The order was given, 5 boats out after whales would take care of 25 men.
The captain won't take whales to the south of the Horn. He'll never give the order.
That's the first time you've been right, Johnson. He won't give the order, but I will. 5 boats out, take care of 25 men, and I'll see that it's none of us. 5 boats with salt in their water breakers, and no ship to come home to. Do you follow me? The current will take them to sea. From there on, it's Davy Jones' worry. We get the gold, head south, scuttle the Queen, and as far as everybody knows, all hands are lost. Then it's every man to his own pleasure, with plenty of gold to buy it.
I say we got the right man to lead it.
My odds on with it.
He is a smart one.
Before another night falls, men, we'll have us a ship. In a week, we'll have gold for ballast, enough to buy us a kingdom. Now break it up quiet and mind your actions. As far as Dixon's concerned, there's nothing changed. And I'll still flog the man that fouls an order. Now lay down the quarters, sharp and quiet. I'll pass the word when the time comes. All we need is a whale, men. One whale and the ship is ours. It was a neat plan and it carried fair. The watch changed. Day broke gray. Johnson was at the helm. Bixby stood lookout high in the fort of gallant yards, all on orders of Jonas Love. Aye, Captain Thixton was lashed in his bunk. I saved him to kill him with the loss of his ship. The proud Captain Thixton, a prisoner of Captain Love. For now, we were whalesmen in search of a whale, any whale. It was watch and wait and watch. And...
Before! Before it's
lay to the helm!
Aye, sir!
Bring her up!
Up!
Helm upon! Hardly now! Bear a hand!
Oh, clockwork, love. That's what it is. I've got to hand it to you.
Did you attend to my orders, Johnson, about the water breakers?
And I'd like to see the face of the first thirsty man. I gave him side meat, too. Good salt hogside to whet their thirst.
They won't last 2 weeks. They're picked up before. It won't make any difference.
Well, all we need is a Jolly Roger from our royal yard, love.
Not quite, Johnson. Sixton still with us. Donahue.
Aye, sir. Jerry Tarister.
You got your knife, Donahue. Sixton's tied in his cabin. Make it fast and sure.
Aye, sir. Fast and sure it is.
Can I bring her about, love?
You'll bring her about when I tell you to, Johnson, and you'll belay the mister when I tell you to, not before. Is that understood?
Aye.
Well, that's it. Bring her about, Johnson. East for south, steady as you go. Our next step is Panama, man. Golden Panama.
We'll pay you to know, love. Now all our stations is equal. It's 4-1 against you. And all of us feel the same.
Johnson, it'll pay you to know that the man who crosses me cuts those odds by one. Now, fill out on your course. The wind took us east and the current went west, carrying before it the crew of the Queen. 5 drifting whaleboats of hopeless men lay at our stern. Our bow, like a finger, points to fortune's door, Panama. A land green-black with tropic growth and our treasure cradled in a mountain nest on our backbone. I put in the fair anchorage in the lee of a point, paid off the hook and called my men. We ride out tonight here in this bay, men. Well, there she is, right up the mountain. The low point between those two peaks.
We still some daylight, love. I say move now.
You'll do no saying, Johnson. We move now right enough, but we'll do it on board. We provision the whaleboat for 10 days.
10 days? Why, it scarce looks a leak.
That it does, Tannehill, but it's a stormy course. That's jungle growth. We'll have to fight it all the way to the top. And we'll have no more crossing! Bigby, look at provisions. Load the whaleboat. Tannehill and Alcott, break out the forge and fashion knives from flinting tools. Make them short in the handle and keen on the edge. You 3 men staying aboard, you'll take up the work till me and Johnson cast off. We'll need our strength.
Us staying aboard?
You take us for fools.
We all go.
You stay aboard. That's an order. A man who thinks different, step up and speak.
You got the map, Mr. Love. Men don't like it that way. Well, what say you, men?
It ain't fair.
What's the keep you from going straight out the other side?
Yes, how do we know you're coming back?
Hold it. Aye, I've got the map. You're right. Not fair that one man should have it. Tannehill, give me your knife.
Aye, sir.
You men don't trust me. You do trust Johnson. That's very well. So,
Here, Johnson, half for you, half for me. Now, does that satisfy you?
Aye. Johnson's for us, fair enough. But you'd better come back. We'll follow you to the gates of hell if you don't.
It's fools that leave a ship unmanned. You'll get your share when we open the trail, Johnson and me. All right, now turn to, bear a hand. There's a fortune waiting the door.
The fools. Simple, arrogant fools. And Johnson, too. Content with a worthless half of a map. Landmarks in plain sight, the last and main bearings stowed safe in my head. Every bearing and distance to the final pace memorized from a thousand readings. Now to find the starting point. The rock with a face and Shepard's notes. Certain great chests of 2 feet deep, 3 broad and 4 long. Ponderous heavy. A wall of jungle to cut. I needed these fools. Even Johnson for a time. Jungle. Lush, rich, gentle. It's a trap, a slimy, stinking, creeping green trap. Hold up, Johnson. Fetch up the water. The bugs. The heat. Green snail. Take the lead, Johnson.
No.
No man can keep this up.
I stay belay it and rest. We need a strength.
Move on, Johnson. We've hacked half a day and we're not a cable's length from the sea. Take the lead.
Well, at last, if we hold this pace. Look at the blasted insects. They're hanging clouds. I stay make camp. Likely tomorrow we'll get a second wind.
We'll get it on the move, Johnson. There's still 3 hours of day. Now take the lead and swing that knife. For 5 killing days, it was hack, slash, hack. Move up the gear, creep on at a tortoise pace. The 6th day, the mountain fanned out on our course, and we rose above that green wall of jungle, and we could see the sea. The mat of the queen waved gently, not 4 leagues down the slope. The sea breeze caught us and cooled our brow. The jungle's web thinned, and we rested. We ate and we smoked.
You've passed the worst of it.
Another day at the most, Johnson.
No more.
You look bad, Johnson. Too much for you?
There's a powerful gripe in my back.
Don't be feeling sorry for yourself. I don't feel gonna rig myself. Now, take up your gear.
No.
We're moving on.
I can't move on.
You want gold, don't you, Johnson? Paul, and you're rotting your tracks. There's more for the rest of us. I'll move out.
No.
Nothing's stopping me now. The great bearded Johnson with the strength of 2 men. He spent his strength with harboring hate, and he fell to blithering. His big, bloody eyes cast up the trail. Useless he was. Weak and out of his mind.
Chop the lines. She's sounding.
What is it, Johnson? You're drooling black.
She'd get 1,000 barrels if I dropped her. Sperm whale. I've seen her with my own 2 eyes.
Johnson, do you know me, man?
Aye. Captain Sexton.
Yeah. You're through, Johnson. I'm moving on. The rock's in sight. I've no time for you now. That's due south 50 paces to such a point as this. But there. There. It's the cave! Johnson's the cave! Sanford's cave, Johnson! My cave! I found it! I found it! It's here. Great chest of gold. Johnson! Johnson, we found it! Chest of it, Johnson! Johnson! Look, Johnson! I brought back a handful. Gold. Johnson, look, Johnson. Lord of mercy. Dead he is. To the fever. And yellow is gold. It's
face, his hands, all yellow like gold. Oh, my hands. No. No, it's not the blight like Johnson. It's just gold dust. It'll wash off. It's not the blight. My hands, my limbs, it don't wash off. No. No, no!
It's the devil's bait on a gilded hook. This fever is the devil's breath. I can feel it now. Boiling up my bile, painting me gold. It'll cook out my soul and leave me poor. This fever, this devil's yellow blight.
The good old summertime may be fun for you, but it's no picnic for your car. Hot summer weather and gritty dust can take your car off the road right into the repair shop. That's why it's important to make sure now that your car is safely lubricated. Get protection against wear and breakdown with Richfield All Point Safety Service. The Richfield gasoline dealer will give your car a careful all-point lubrication job using Rich Lube lithium lubricant, the new premium lubricant that stands up under the toughest use, that wears like iron. Then he'll change your oil to fresh Rich Lube all-weather motor oil, the oil that cleans your motor as it lubricates. And finally, the Richfield dealer will give your car a careful safety check of all the likely trouble spots. So why take chances? Get Richfield All-Point Safety Service from the Richfield gasoline dealer tomorrow. Stop where you see the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pump. Escape was produced and directed by William N. Robson, and tonight has presented by Bud Nelson. Featured in tonight's cast were Bill Conrad as Love, John Hoyt as Sanford, John Daner as Johnson, Will Gear as Sexton. Also heard were Paul Free, Stacey Harris, Harry Bartell, and George Offerman Jr. Special music arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars.
Now, from the makers of Coldwater Omo,
in the dark cellar of a special administration building at St. Catherine's, the Brigadier and Major Parsons were disturbed in their work and startled by Sergeant Hearn, who entered with unseemly haste, tore across the floor, almost forgetting the soldierly formalities, and skidded to a stop in front of them. He just remembered to throw a salute before he said,
"Intruders in the area, sir. Unauthorized. Few men. Got away, sir."
"Got away?"
"Report, Sergeant."
"And make it coherent?"
"Yes, sir. Two unauthorized men, sir. Stole a vehicle, sir."
"Well, they can't get very far that way. All roads are blocked. Which way were they headed?"
"I'm not sure, sir. I think they went to the northern part of the town."
"Know who they were?"
"One man's name is Steed, the other Merlin."
"Merlin? That's all we need, a blasted sorcerer. Major!"
"Sir?"
"You'd better handle this. A full platoon."
"Yes, sir."
"Now use method in tracking them. Cross-plot the entire area and comb every inch."
"Yes, sir." "Do you want them alive for questioning, sir?"
"I most certainly do not. Shoot them. After a proper firing squad has been convened. That's the way to deal with them. Give them a fair trial and shoot them."
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
We'll be right back.
episode 4 of this story, in which John Steed and Jimmy Merlin find themselves an ally, but still can't unravel the mystery of what's going on in St. Catharines the morning after. John Steed was determined. He'd found Jimmy Merlin, and regardless of what was going on, he wasn't going to release him. Admittedly, this was a severe setback. He wasn't sure when Merlin would try to make a break for it. It meant watching him and whatever was round the next corner. And driving the armored car was difficult with only one hand. Steed decided to park the thing.
What's the idea? I'd hoped you were going to get us out of here.
I've told you. I'm not leaving Mrs. Peel. Be realistic, Merlin. If this whole town is under martial law, they'll have barriers up on all the roads out of it.
I suppose that's true. But look, Steed, I'm your prisoner, right?
Right.
And I'm your responsibility, right?
Right.
Then you're supposed to take care of me, right?
Wrong.
But the rules say...
There are no rules in this business, Merlin. You should know that. Now, you want to find out what's going on, don't you?
No.
Well, there you are, then. Come on.
Steed dragged Merlin out of the parked car. They walked stealthily down the street and round the corner. There, not more than a few yards away, was a radio van, the one they'd seen earlier. The round, circular aerial had stopped revolving. This made Steed wonder if there was anyone in the van. He pulled Merlin forward.
I'm going to try the rear doors.
Steed reached the van, grasped the rear door handle, and jerked it open.
Oh, well... You might have knocked.
What's that, miss? Shall I clobber him?
Yates, a stocky young cockney, jumped from the van and approached Steed and Merlin. He held a large, heavy spanner in one hand.
No, no good. It's a fair cop. I suppose it isn't any use asking you two not to destroy the film. Remember, it is more than a scoop, it's history. Confiscate it if you want. Lock it away, but please don't destroy it. After all, I could put this in...
The girl stopped. She noticed the handcuffs that linked Steed and Merlin together.
What on earth's going on here?
I wish someone would tell us.
You mean you honestly don't know?
No, no idea.
Do me.
You know, Yates, I think they're telling the truth. But it's fantastic.
It's not that fantastic. We've been knocked out for nearly 24 hours. Whatever has happened here at St. Catharines happened then.
And we missed it. Boy, it's still incredible that you don't know. The whole world knows.
I do hate to think that the whole world has me at a disadvantage.
I won't tell you what's happened. I can do better than that. I can show it to you. Climb into the van.
No.
It's all right. This is no trickery. I'm on the level.
All right. Come on, Merlin.
It was tiny and cramped inside the van. Yates moved to a TV monitor at the far end and began flicking switches.
I'm Jenny Thurston, by the way. Television News. We came in to cover the event, and then, when everyone was ordered out of the area...
We stayed on. Against orders, of course. We've been sneaking around the streets, picking up what shots we can. Okay, miss, ready for the playback. Switch it on.
Right. This is the newscast you would have seen if you hadn't been asleep all day yesterday.
This is Jenny Thurston. I'm standing here in the heart of St. Catharines. Cars are still pouring out of the town in their thousands. But jams are building up, and already owners are abandoning the private vehicles and hurrying away to the special coaches standing by for evacuation.
It was difficult for me to do this commentary. So much was going on.
Special troops, shock troops, enter the town. A state of emergency has been proclaimed. Within 30 minutes, this town and the surrounding 50 square miles surrounding it will be evacuated. It will become a ghost area, empty save for the troops. The area is under martial law as from now. Ah, here you see the man who will remain in sole command. Brigadier Hanson.
Oh, Hanson's in
charge. Look at those troops, Strickland! Easy there, man!
Yes, miss, what is it?
Television News. Brigadier, are you satisfied that everyone has been warned to leave the area?
We've called on everyone. Yes, I'm satisfied.
And how do you feel about staying on?
I'm a soldier. I have a duty.
Clear that truck! Get moving there, man! We've got others arriving! Move!
What I would like to stress to the nation is that there is no need to panic. We have everything under control. We know what we must do, and we shall do it. Excuse me.
You man! Move that truck!
He knows what he must
do. Get that
brave words from a brave man.
Gently,
and there is the commission building. In there lies the task he must tackle. And the whole world will be waiting with bated breath to see the outcome of that task. If he succeeds, a royal welcome awaits him. If he fails, then he, his troops, this town, the countryside for 50 miles or more, will cease to exist.
Frightening, isn't it?
The Eastern Hemisphere Trade Commission building. It was vacated recently, but its occupants left behind them a monster buried deep in the cellar. They left behind the atom bomb, which Brigadier Hansing and his men must attempt to defuse at once. And now I think we should pass on to the crowds and ask their opinions. The men over there for the coach.
All right, Yates, that's enough. Kill it.
Yes, miss.
An atom bomb? But why? Who?
No one's sure. The Trade Commission building was occupied by representatives of more than 20 countries. Your guess is as good as mine.
A hostile warhead deep in the middle of our own territory.
Nice ace to have up one's sleeve.
How was it discovered?
Pure fluke. Brigadier Hansen's one of the nuclear experts. He was staging some maneuvers in this area. His instruments registered radioactivity. He pinpointed the bomb.
That explains a great deal.
I should have thought it explained everything.
So, Miss Thurston, you're here without authority, then?
Afraid so. If we're caught, they'll...
Shoot you.
Oh, I think a firm reproof would be more in order.
Don't kid yourself. We've already seen how trigger-happy they are. Firing squad's already been at work.
You've got to be joking.
I'm afraid not.
You mean they actually shot someone? Here, in an English country town?
There is a state of emergency.
Did you hear that, Yates? Come on, we can't miss this.
Right, miss.
No, better still. You stay inside here. These two can ride with me in the front and show me the way. You can tell me more about yourself as we drive.
I say, look here.
No arguing. This could make the biggest story we've ever done. Well, come on. No time to lose.
Jenny Thurston handled the vehicle with professional skill. She drove fast, but well, following Steed's vague instructions, and at the same time listening to him explain why he was still handcuffed to Jimmy Merlin.
And so, I can't let this man go, you understand?
Sounds unbelievable to me.
No more unbelievable than what's happening to us at this moment.
No, I suppose not. Doesn't look criminal.
Don't be fooled by his looks and easy charm. They're very deceptive.
I say, I wish to the devil you wouldn't keep discussing me as though I wasn't here. It's very embarrassing.
I've only said nice things so far.
All the same, it's embarrassing. I notice you haven't asked to hear my side of things.
You haven't got a side of things. Anything you tell Jenny will be calculated to foul up her task. Forget him, Jenny.
Oh, I won't do that.
Thank you.
But I will be careful. It's round this corner, isn't it?
Bad as steel at the wheel.
Well, you've got to put up with it. You can't get out and walk.
Hey, look, up ahead. Soldier. Looks like a major.
It was Major Parsons. Alone. But with a drawn revolver.
What now?
Slow down. It's about time I made myself known to the authorities.
You sure that's safe?
Don't worry. I'd have probably been sent into the area anyway.
Hey, Major. I'm John Steed, security clearance KR5. Might be able to give you a hand.
No, don't stop. Come
on. Merlin suddenly stretched out a long leg and stabbed his foot over Jenny's foot on the accelerator. The van leapt forward. The wing caught the Major and sent him flying.
Drive on, I tell you.
You crazy.
You drive on. What the devil do you think you're doing? You've got to kill him. That I recognize him. That's no Major, Steve. He's no Major. What? That man is not British. His name's Parninsky. Gregor Parninsky. A cutthroat, a pirate, a mercenary.
Are you sure?
I'm quite sure. That man lying back there in the road unconscious is Parninsky, a Russian agent. Figure that one out, Steve.
Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omen.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
Escape! Designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to the waterfront of Havana and to an underworld where men live and sometimes die by a bizarre code of their own. As Burnham Carter tells it in his exciting story, Night in Havana.
Something was wrong. Halfway up the street of Pius Works that evening, I realized that something was wrong. None of the regulars were to be seen. Assuredly, something was wrong. But what? And then I remembered that since I had decided to live an honest life, it was really no concern of mine. As I came abreast of the Why Worry restaurant, I saw the Dutchman, Maru, who owned a cabin cruiser and who was, consequently, a man of some prominence in the smuggling trade. He was standing on the weighing machine near the door, slapping it with his big hands.
Ah, tio, you have a penny?
A penny? Si.
Thanks. Ah, 193 pounds. When I reach 195, I'll switch from beer to coffee. When I hit 190, I go back to beer.
It's like the rise and fall of the tide in Havana Harbor.
2 pounds of beer to go. If you're headed for the Cafe Mosca, I'll join you.
Well, bueno. Hey, come along.
Tio, got a few dollars to lend me?
I have not seen any money in weeks. I was hoping to find a purchaser for my gun this evening.
Oh, Tio, you're kidding. You're going to sell your gun?
Si.
How will you live?
Honestly.
Honestly,
Maru,
you?
Please, you are attracting attention. Quiet, you have attracted attention. Quiet.
What?
The police, Lieutenant Molina, across the street.
Oh, here they come. Who's that with him?
Sergeant Ortiz, newly promoted, very ambitious and... No, I missed the highlight game last night, Maru. I remained at home and read instead.
You, stand where you are.
Why, it is Lieutenant Molina and Sergeant...
Search this one, Sergeant.
Nothing, Lieutenant. This one conceals nothing.
You see, I lead a dull and peaceful life.
I see that you do. Use your handkerchief, Tio. Your lips bleeding. They seemed upset.
I bear them no ill will. They have a hard life, too. It is still bleeding, huh?
Yeah. You can doctor it at the Cafe Mosca.
They must have been told to get someone for something.
You know, I held my breath during that frisk. I was afraid you might be carrying your gun.
I was. But when I saw them coming toward us, I put it in your pocket. May I have it now, please?
Here. That is not what I would call honorable, Tio.
Maru, there is so little honor in this world that one is just not able to toss it about indiscriminately. Tell me, does my lip look bad?
It's beginning to swell.
Amalia will be very upset.
Amalia? Who owns the mosque?
Si, we are betrothed.
No, I did not know that. Congratulations.
Gracias.
Come. I buy you a beer. Come on, step up to the bar.
Later, Brad. Thank you, but now I must see Amalia.
Tio, little one. Oh, I tear your lip.
Oh, did nothing, Amalia. Nothing. The police were in a petulant mood. There is nothing.
Oh, the police, yes. They were here. A lieutenant. Wait, he gave me his card. Yes, Lieutenant Molina.
Tell me, did he mention the cause of all this ill feeling?
An American tourista, a very rich one, a very gay one. She has been robbed.
And so soon after the police chief let it be known that American tourists were not to be robbed.
Si.
Amalia, what did she lose?
An emerald. An emerald of great size. Oh. She had it in her purse, left the purse in the Café Diablo. Tio.
Get you up 2100.
You had nothing to do with this matter, did you?
No, my fair one, nothing. I wish I had.
You promised, Tio, you promised.
I know, but... Amalia, it's not easy to be honest. I would have been honest years ago, could I have earned money.
Little one, listen to me. After each of your transactions, they have kept you in the jail. It is like my account books. One malefaction, one payment in jail.
See.
Now you owe them nothing. There are no debts.
But you have a debt. The mortgage of $2,100 on this cafe.
Oh, let that be. Little by little we shall pay it.
But there is my pride to consider, my dove. To this marriage, you bring the Cafe Mosca. I bring nothing.
Ay, Tio. You bring your love. Is that nothing?
Oh, in your eyes it is much, see, but in the eyes of the bank, it's nada. Who is this American tourista who carries emeralds in her purse? Huh?
Mrs. Turner. She is here with her husband. They have great wealth. They came from Miami in their own cruiser. It is called the Seabird, and it is almost as large as Maru's. Tio, promise me you will not become involved.
I promise that if I do, it will be within the law.
Oh, little one, I beg you.
It will be within the law, I swear it to you. Did Lieutenant Molina mention a reward?
No. He said that if I acquired information concerning the emerald, I was to inform either him or Mr. and Mrs. Turner at the Hotel Flores.
Well, perhaps it would be best to learn whether there is a reward and of a size sufficient to warrant time and effort. I am going to see Senor Sterner, Amalie.
Tio, little one, I am afraid.
Oh, there is nothing to fear. An honest man need never have anything to fear. Let me have Lieutenant Molina's card, my dove. It may help me to impress the Americans.
Yes?
Senor Sterner.
Yes.
I am Lieutenant Molina, of the secret police. In my car.
Come in, Lieutenant Molina. Tell me, is there another detective with that name? It seems to me...
Well, it is a common patronym, like in your country, Smith.
Oh, yeah. Have you found the emerald?
Regrettably, Senor, no. But I would like to talk about it.
And I'll call my wife. She's the one who lost it. The knucklehead. Lucille!
Don't yell so, Ducky.
This is Lieutenant Molina of the secret police.
Ah, it is a great honor, Senora.
Just see that, Ducky. He took my hand.
I saw. Now, sit down, Lieutenant. You care for a drink?
No, thank you. Not while on duty.
What's on your mind, Lieutenant? My wife and I have a dinner date
tonight.
It has
occurred to us, the chief and I, that although we will, of course, eventually catch the thief, it will take some time. You understand, there are 1,000 rat holes and rats of many nations and much cunning.
We don't have much time. Mrs. Sterner and I are leaving Havana tomorrow afternoon.
And that brings me precisely to my point. The matter of a reward.
No. Not another nickel. If I can't grease the wheels with $750, they just won't be greased. I'm a reasonable man, Lieutenant, but I'm no sucker.
Of course you are not. $750.
Ducky, I'm sure the Lieutenant knows his business. If he thinks the reward ought to be boosted, then boost it. I want that emerald back.
Now, look, Lucille,
would 1,000 be better, Lieutenant?
Oh, indeed it would, Senora.
Then offer 1,000, Ducky.
You see, Senor Sterner, whether I go between...
Yeah. I know how it works. Okay, call it 1,000.
1,000 dollars? It would not pay the mortgage on the Cafe Mosca, of course, but considering that virtue is said to be its own reward for being, it was handsome. I spent the next 2 hours seeking knowledge of the emerald, but the activities of the police had forced the best of the regulars into hiding, and I learned nothing. And then, as I was walking along the street of souls in the old city, a voice spoke to me from the darkness of the gateway to the ancient convent known as El Corazón.
Tio Martinez?
Your servant.
Got a matter we'd like to
talk to you about.
We?
Him and me.
Oh, your pardon. I could not see your friend in the shadows.
We got a mutual acquaintance. Georgie Young.
Georgie Young? Oh, see. I have not seen him since the profitable years of Prohibition.
Before we left Miami, he said to look you up if we ever needed someone to work an angle. He gave us his letter of introduction.
Oh, thank you. Strike a match, please.
Yeah.
A little closer, please. Dear friend Theo, these muchachos are okay. I have a deal with them, just like in the old days, Georgie. Well, you know my name. What is yours?
Moore, Gus Moore.
My name's none of your business.
Stop it, Leo, will you? His name's Leo Walsh. We only been here in Cuba a little while.
You said that you needed somebody to work an angle.
Yeah. We got a shipment on the Florida coast just beyond Key West. We want it brought here tonight. There's 400 rifles.
Please, I am not interested in the nature of your cargo. You tell me that you are importers, and that is all an honest man need know.
Yeah.
Is it George Young who provides you with the merchandise?
Oh, yeah.
Just like in the old days. It can be done, gentlemen, but it will cost money, of course. $1,500.
That's highway robbery. Let me rough him up a little.
Stop it, Leo, will you? Okay, Martinez, $1,500. Cash on delivery.
Half of it now.
$300 now.
I'm sorry, no.
Well, that's all the cash we have.
How do you propose to get more?
How much is this worth?
The American Tourista's Emerald.
Huh?
What's so funny?
Oh, just the ways of fortune. I'm sorry, you would not understand.
You talk too much.
Yeah. See, one of my great failings.
I can fix that.
Cut it out, Leo. Well, how about it? That rock's worth more than $1,200.
Oh, much more. But the question is, what can one unload it for? Hmm? Tell me, how did you acquire this?
Oh, a dame I picked up at a bar while her husband was dead drunk. Well?
I will make the arrangements. You give me $300 on the emerald.
Yeah, you get the $300 now as a binder. I'll hand you the stone when you've delivered.
Very well, I agree. Now, you listen carefully to me. You will both meet me at the Café Mosca at 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. We shall drive from there to a certain beach where we pick up the boat. Is that clear?
Yeah. Leo will meet you.
And you?
Oh, I'm staying at Havana. I got to make arrangements for the truck. I'll meet the boat when it comes back and hand over the emerald. Just tell me where.
The beach at Marianao. There's a dirt road. You cannot miss it. To Key West, 15 minutes to load, 3 hours back to Cuba. Mm-hmm. The boat will arrive at Marianao by 5 tomorrow morning. Is it well?
Yeah. Here's your $300.
Much thanks, senor.
You know what I do to chappies who talk too much?
Stop it, Leo, will you? You'll meet at the Musky at 11.
It will be my pleasure. Well, is that coffee you drink, Maru?
Oh, sit down, Theo, sit down. Yeah, it's coffee, all right. I hit 195 a half hour ago.
Well,
what's up?
If you're not too busy tonight, there's a little shipment to be moved in from Key West.
Oh, how much?
$1,000 for you.
And for you?
Only 100.
God, what do you think? I'm stupid.
Oh, you are a devil. One can hide nothing from you. Very well, I receive 150.
You.
Is it a deal?
What time do we leave?
Around 11.
I'll have the boat ready just off Guanabaco. You know the dock, sir?
Yes.
Bring the 1,000 with you.
I will give you the 1,000 tomorrow, soon after we return.
Bring it with you, or we do not even leave. Well?
I will bring it with me.
Good. Have some coffee.
No, gracias. It is necessary now to see Amelia. Until 11.
Until 11.
Theo, I was worried, little one. You were gone so long.
Oh, I had much business to transact. Oh, Amelia, I am working on a deal. A very big deal. So big that I need $1,000 to swing it.
Theo.
See, I have 300 and I need 700 more. Amelia, will you lend it to me?
I have but 800 in the whole world.
Well, lend me 7. Oh, if this deal proceeds as planned, Amelia, you and I will be married this week, and then I shall settle down as an honest cafe keeper.
Oh, Theo, for that I would give all the money there is.
Where is this boat? I don't see it.
Impatient, Senor Walsh. It's the end of the dock.
A dock, he calls it. Some crummy dock.
No, quiet, quiet, please. Maru.
Here, Tio.
Captain Maru, this is Senor Leo Walsh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You have some money, Tio?
Here. $1,000 has agreed. Senor Walsh will guide you to the exact spot at Key West. And, gentlemen, I wish you both a good journey.
Save your wishes for somebody else. You're coming with us.
No. I make it a point never to...
I say you are. What is this?
I have a repugnance for guns between associates.
And I don't trust people who talk so much. You're coming with us. Now get in.
I shall do as you say.
All right, now you, Skipper.
Thank you.
Some tub.
You'll never see a faster one.
How fast?
40 knots.
All right, shove off. How come you're so quiet, big mouth?
Oh, I was just thinking. I was thinking that the life of honesty contains almost as much interest as the kind I have formerly led.
In just a moment, we will return to Escape. But first, a favorite program with CBS listeners who want to keep abreast of the times is the news report by Alan Jackson, broadcast every Sunday morning over most of these same CBS stations. Jackson is one of CBS's ace reporters who has covered important world events in New York, London, and Berlin. Now stationed in CBS Washington News Bureau, Alan Jackson brings you the news in a clear, informed manner that has become a CBS tradition. Remember to listen this Sunday to Alan Jackson and the News, a regular CBS feature.
Tune in this fall for the shows that you love best of all. Listen carefully, here's the address. It's CBS.
And now back to Escape and the second act of Night in Havana.
In 3 hours, we were passing through the Florida Keys. Maru had no difficulty in following Senor Walsh's directions. There was a place where a finger of land cut into the water, an old rum runner's landing base which I remembered well. A truck was waiting, and 3 men who came forward as we tied to the dock of rotting planks. Senor Walsh spoke to them briefly, and in 10 minutes the heavy crates were on board and we were off again, clearing the land quietly at a low speed and then roaring into the open.
Come on, pour it on, pour it on.
I'm giving it full throttle now. Relax, Sonny.
Listen, Squarehead.
You talking to me?
Who else? I don't like for you to call me Sonny.
I do it because you're so bright.
How would you like a third eye?
Senor Walsh, Maru, enough. Carry this as far as you please once we are on shore, but until then...
Yeah, we will go into it first after we
I left them to their squabbling, stretched out on the bench in the cockpit, my head on my arms, gazing into the sky. And soothed by the powerful hum of the engines, so steady that they were in themselves a sort of silence. I thought of Amalia, and how soft and comfortable she was, and that we were both at the right age for marriage. Steady people who knew that what we had was worth a dozen romantic flights to the moon. And I thought of how now there would be a little money for the raising of the mortgage and the Cafe Mosca. And then I dozed. And then...
What's the matter? How come you cut the motor?
Shut up. Tio, are you awake? Do you hear it?
Si. Where are your binoculars?
Binoculars? What are you looking for?
Coast Guard.
Where are we, Maru?
About 2 miles off the coast between Matanzas and Havana.
I see them. They're to the west about the same distance out. What is the time?
4:20. The sun will be up in less than 2 hours. Which way is it heading?
I cannot... Well... There's a searchlight. They see us.
They were tipped off. They were looking for us. Somebody talked. Martinez,
shut up.
It's radar. They're also equipped. I have heard that. They come toward us.
Dump the cargo. When they come, we've been fishing.
No, every set I got is tied up in those boxes.
I said dump the guns.
And I said no. We'll run for it. This boat's faster than that one.
At this angle, they have us cut off from the open sea. If we go west, we pass Havana. If we go east, Matanzas. As soon as we move, they radio for help. They call.
And I said we'll run for it. Now take the wheel, fat boy, and pour it on. But on. They're moving fast.
I come on, Tio.
No, you don't. This does. Get back to the wheel.
Careful, Maru. Careful. He's frightened.
Put away your gun, Sonny.
Stand where you are.
I said...
Shoot me, will you?
Enough, Maru, enough. His spine has cracked like a banana stalk. Enough, I say.
Gio. I hurt. I hurt bad.
Lie down here. Let me see.
Well?
Ugly, Maru. Very ugly.
Help me to the wheel.
Yeah.
Then drop the dinghy and row to shore. I try to make it back to Key West.
You need care immediately. We'll both go to shore in the dinghy.
But my boat, the Coast Guard...
I will turn it out to sea and set the throttles. She'll give them a run for their money.
But when they overtake her, they'll find the cargo. They know the boat is mine.
One step at a time, Maru. The moment we will do as I say. First we feed Senor Wolf to the fishes. Then the dinghy goes over the side. Then you and I. I landed the dinghy only a short distance below the place where I'd left the car. Before 5:30, Maru was in good hands and I was at the Flores Hotel, knocking at the door of the suite occupied by Senor and Senora Stern. At that moment, I would have surrendered all thoughts of profit for this night's labor in return for assurance that only Amalia's $700 would not be lost.
Lieutenant Molina, this is a sweet time.
I give you 1,000 apologies, Senor. Only an emergency forces me to do this. We can't get your emerald now. Do you understand?
Yeah, sure. But
only we need your cruiser. You must come with me in your cruiser. And now. I assure you it is our only chance. There is no danger, Senor.
All right, I'll get dressed.
I'll be waiting for you across the street in the black touring car. You come quickly, wear dark clothes, bring the money. But quickly, Senor, quickly.
Where are we going?
We are bound for the beach called Marianao.
Never heard of it.
Has a wooden pier. Should be just about light enough to distinguish. We arrived. Hey, you have brought the cash.
Yeah. How much do I have to pay?
The maximum, Senor, $1,000. They would not do it for less, I am sorry.
No, it's okay. I didn't think you could keep them down even to that. Am I on course?
Yes, exactly on course. We are almost there. I think that you had better give me the money now.
Yeah, it's in my right hip pocket, Lieutenant. Help yourself.
Much thanks. Senor, I am sorry that our original laxity in guarding the possessions of your wife has put you to all this trouble.
No, forget it. It's one piece with the rest of the trip. I've had a lousy time.
Oh, I am most sorry. We naturally prefer to have the turistas love Cuba.
It's not your fault. I was mostly too drunk to see any of it.
I have always tried... Senor, there is more than $1,000 in this pocket. There... It's 1,100.
Oh, yeah. I meant to tell you. The 1,000's for the emerald, the other 100's for you, for all of your courtesy and attention.
Oh, regulations forbid me to accept, Senor. But since it would be discourteous, much thanks. Hey, we are past Caminitas now, I think. Yes, there is the dock at Maranao. Here, let me take the wheel.
Hey, someone on shore is blinking a light there. Three times.
I have noticed.
Hey, what are you doing? Heading out to sea?
No. I will back in. So. And now comes the most important part, Senor. Now, when I bring the boat to a halt at the dock, you must take the wheel and keep your hand on the throttle with the motor running. And when I say to you, now, you throw in the clutch and full speed ahead. Do you understand me, Senor?
Well, sure, but why? It's all arranged, isn't it?
Si, it is arranged, and this is the most crucial part of the arrangement.
Okay, whatever you say, Lieutenant.
All right, you take the wheel. Now remember, keep your hand on the throttle.
Don't forget easy.
Here comes my man along the dock now. Remember, when I say now.
Go ahead, let's get this over.
Si. Senor Moore.
Martinez.
Si, everything has gone well.
West watch.
At the wheel.
Oh, good. Throw me a line, I'll get my boys to start unloading.
First, before you tie us up, we will conclude our affair. You have the emerald for me?
Oh, yeah. Here, take it.
Good. Much thanks. Here is our cable. Make fast the boat, huh?
Yeah, I got it.
Now, Senor, now! Lie down. Lie down on the deck.
What?
But quickly. You will not be surprised forever. Lie down. Stay there.
Well, I don't understand.
I think we'll soon be out of range.
You lead an interesting life, Molina.
It has its moments.
When I saw you hand him the cable, I was sure I'd rip the stern off her as soon as I gave it throttle.
Well, senor, I took the precaution to untie it on our side first. Look, look, the sun is rising.
Senor, do you know of any satisfaction to compare with that accompanying good job, well done?
Three days later, I was sitting at a table in the Café Moscow with Maru. His wounds still troubled him, and he had lost much weight. A matter he was remedying as quickly as he could.
Two more beers.
Better make it three. Visitor approaches. Huh? No. Don't turn your head. It's Lieutenant Molina.
Oh, they found my boat.
You are ready with the story.
It was stolen while I was ill. I know nothing of it.
Bueno. I will testify to it. No, Maru. I have lost my taste for reading. I now spend most evenings at the highlight games, and I find
Captain
that
Maru? Yeah? The Coast Guard has found a boat that belongs to you. Do you have so many that one may be lost without your feeling the necessity of reporting it?
I've been ill. I've not been down to the harbor these 3 days.
I have a question to ask.
Ask it, then.
They found several large crates on board.
They did?
Do you know what we discovered in them? Scrap metal.
Scrap metal? I use it for ballast. Care for a beer?
Si, to celebrate my wedding, which occurs this afternoon.
So I have heard. You are going to lead an honest life, Tio?
Si. I have been experimenting with it, and I find that it suits me.
Well, keep it confidential. Otherwise, the budget for the police department may be cut to the bone.
Goodbye, Lieutenant. Go with God.
You heard what he said? The crates contain scrap metal.
I'm not surprised. In the note my friend Georgie Young sent to me, he wrote that he was in on a deal just like in the old days. Huh? Well, in the old days, he sold many a bootlegger barrels of whiskey which contained only water. In that way, you see, he did not break the law and may be said to have earned his money honorably. As I may be said to do, too.
You call owning a cafe earning money honorably?
Well, it depends on the clientele. Huh? And in that respect, Maru, perhaps it would be better after the wedding, of course, if you took your custom elsewhere.
Suppose I tell you that from now on I will be as honest as you yourself. Will you let me patronize this bar?
Gladly, Maru. But, of course, I will be doubly watchful of the cash register.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Tonight we have presented Night in Havana by Burnham Carter, adapted for radio by Walter Brown Newman. Featured in the cast were Tony Barrett as T.O., Alan Reed as Maru, and Janet Nolan as Amelia and Mrs. Sterner. Also heard were Ted Von Eltz, Bill Conrad, Jeff Corey, and Jack Webb. Special music was arranged and conducted by Del Castillo. Next week...
You were tortuously worming your way inch by inch through a narrow pipe deep under the ground. Unable to turn back, not knowing what lies ahead. Possible death or escape.
Next week, we escape with William Corcoran's grim story, The Blue Wall. Good night, then, until the same time next week when once again we offer you Escape.
Have a good evening, and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.